It's time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitten Madness.
And here he goes, defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Here are your hosts, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes.
Hello there. Good morning. This is Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes set to talk Michigan sports. For the next hour, we got huge games to pick. College football playoff. Do keep in mind, we have no idea just yet what happened between Notre Dame and Indiana. That game happens on Friday night. We're recording Friday morning around 11 a.m., so we will pick the remainder of the college football playoff field, though we did pick that Notre Dame-Indiana game last week. We also got to get into some Lions stuff. We got to talk a Michigan-Alabama bowl game because, of course, we do. It's perfect for this show. But we'll get all into that here in just a little bit. DJ, we start the show the same way we do every day. How's it going, man?
I can't complain too much. My fantasy hopes are just about over. I'm playing for third place in both of my important leagues. But I will say third place in one league is a total disappointment to me because I by far have the most knowledge in that league and should be winning that league. The other one, third place, is an absolute like godsend.
Yeah.
Like from where I was, from where this team was a year ago when I picked them up to fighting for third place, I think it's fantastic. And then, you know, sports time is always during this time of year has me excited.
Yeah, that second league is my league.
Yes.
And I'm trying to get to the championship, but hats off to you, man, because that team had been squandered for years. You immediately turned it around, got it in the playoffs. We have a lot of fun with that. All right, let's not waste too much time. The Detroit Lions, man, they are 12-2, which is fantastic, right? That is incredible. It's franchise altering, it's record setting, it's city rejuvenating, it's all the monikers, right? This team has the most ridiculous injury luck on the planet. The number of players that have joined the injured reserve, particularly from the defensive side of the football, and many of which will not be coming back. And now it's starting to kind of seep into the offensive side of the ball as well, because David Montgomery is potentially out for the rest of the regular season. News did come out Thursday afternoon that Montgomery may be able to come back in the postseason. Of course, everyone is holding their breath and hoping that this team can reach the Super Bowl, in which case Aiden Hutchinson would likely be able to come back and contribute at least in that one game. Just get 40 snaps out of Hutch in the big game, right? And see what happens. But, I mean, you got Jalen Reeves-Maybin is designated to return. That's a good thing. But Brian Branch is questionable this week with a calf injury, which is new. Frank Ragnow is questionable this week, which is new. Ifeanyi Melifonwu, he's coming back off of IR soon, but nonetheless, he's missed a ton of time. Khalil Dorsey just shattered his ankle, basically. Carlton Davis broke his jaw. Ali McNeil tore his knee up. You point to anywhere on this defense, and it gets worse, but you know, some guys like Alex Anzalone might be able to come back at some point. It's tough, but I think you look at the remainder of the schedule, you look at the Bears and the 49ers on the road, both very winnable games. 49ers are tougher than their record indicates, but they're beatable. They're not reaching the playoffs. You know, whether or not they cash in on the season and call it a day is not super likely, but it could be the situation you're walking into. And then that Vikings game at home in Ford Field could likely be the game that gets flexed to the Sunday Night Football game as the last game of the season, in which case it would be aired here on BCK. So I'm rooting for that, but it would determine the number one seed in the NFC side of the playoffs. And if the Lions can pull that off, man, and get all of this help back in the postseason, get these guys off of IR and back into the defensive starting lineup, then a lot of things can change for the Lions. But I ask you, DJ, Should folks just be concerned? Like, should the idea of even getting that number one seed kind of go away? Because the defense was pretty exposed against Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. Now, Allen's obviously on an MVP pace. He's doing fantastic things. He's getting over all of his bugaboos and looks destined to go to the Super Bowl. But for these Lions and for the fans that are watching them, how much room for concern is there, and how worried are you?
I would love to say that there is no reason for concern, but of course there is. You have almost 20 players on IR, and most of them are from your defense. That is scary. But what isn't so scary is, well, you did put up 42 points, even with a few injuries coming to your offensive end this weekend. You can score in bunches. So that should alleviate some of that stress, knowing that if it does turn into a scenario where it's a shootout and you got to score points, you can put points on the board. And honestly, David Montgomery is a huge loss, but at the same time, you got Jahmyr Gibbs in your backfield who can be a three down running back. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's someone behind him to take over that change of pace if you need it there. So they're not necessarily going to bad space offensively, but going into the playoffs without large parts of your defense is a place of concern. If they're going to lose a game, it's because they're not going to be able to make a stop. And that is kind of heartbreaking, honestly, because they have deserved to be in the position that they're in right now, and they deserve to make a serious run for the Super Bowl, but it may come down to injury, something that they kind of have zero control over.
Craig Reynolds is likely going to be the guy to spell Jahmyr Gibbs the most. The Lions are very high on Sione Vaki, but you know, not exactly a ton of experience there, but I mean, I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, counting Michael Badgley, players on injured reserve. Now, like I said, a lot of those guys can come back. Alex Anzalone, Aiden Hutchinson, David Montgomery's not on the IR, but he can come back. So there's opportunity here to get strong right when you need to and still have that boost in the playoffs. I think it's paramount that the Lions get home field advantage. So they've got to win these last three games, as far as I'm concerned. It will not be easy to do that, obviously. My biggest concern really isn't with the defensive injuries, because like I said, you get some of those guys back. Once the linebackers come back and it's not just Jack Campbell out there, once Melifonwu is available again, it's not just Brian Branch and Kirby Joseph out there, as well as Terry and Arnold. Secondary's done a little bit better job of staying healthy. But, you know, once you get to the point where you're not just putting out guys who came off the street 2 weeks ago, I think you'll be fine. My biggest concern for the entirety of a Super Bowl run is David Montgomery. Now, he's going to miss these next few weeks and might come back in the postseason, and I still think that's a might based off of the reports that we've gotten, but I don't know that the offense can be what it needs to be without him. I agree with you. Jahmyr Gibbs is fantastic. Three down back. I no notes on Jahmyr Gibbs. Sonic is great, but the Sonic and Knuckles aspect to that offense really drives forward what they need in order to establish the mentality and the physicality of the game early and to close it out late as well. I don't have a lot of faith in this team without David Montgomery. Without the defense, I think they've shown that they can overcome the issues on defense, because they've had to do it for the past 4 or 5 weeks, because these injuries have only gotten worse and worse and worse. But without David Montgomery, that's where you're going to start drawing a lot of concern out of me, because the offense isn't the same without him.
I think a lot of people are forgetting that Jared Goff has been to a Super Bowl. Like, Jared Goff is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL right now. Especially what we've seen this season, he had one bad game. It arguably is horrible, like one of the worst games we've ever seen, and he still won that game. So, like, I'm not too concerned with David Montgomery not being there offensively, like, personally, because I feel like if they need to lean on the pass a little bit more, they have athletes in the passing game all over, a quarterback who can get them the ball, and then they can sprinkle in the run where they see fit and where it will be advantageous for them with the running backs they have available. What scares me is the pass rush. Like, yes, you get some of those defensive guys back, but the ones that you may not be getting back are on your pass rush. And if you're not getting pressure on the quarterback, your defensive backs can only cover for so long. So that is where I'm scared about them getting stops on the defensive end, is the front seven. Being able to stop the run and get pressure on the quarterback is going to be uberly important in the playoffs. They get some of those guys back, I think a lot of that concern alleviates. But at this moment, that's my number one concern.
I mean, my concern is there as well, but I think Za'Darius Smith has done a good job. I think guys like Al-Quadin Muhammad have really stepped up. Pat O'Connor has really stepped up. Like, you've gotten some guys that have stepped up into this situation. And then Aaron Glenn, who's doing as good of a job as you could possibly imagine, especially considering how bad of a job he was doing just a few years ago when this defense didn't have nearly as much talent on it, with scheming up ways to create pressure. I think the one game in which they didn't have Aiden Hutchinson or Za'Darius Smith was the game that they had the most sacks all season. Like, they've found ways to overcome the issue. And I understand where you're coming from about Jared Goff. He is fantastic. And yeah, he's been to a Super Bowl. Todd Gurley had a lot to do with that, is kind of my point. I'm not saying that Goff can't open up the offense, because the quadrant of receiving talent that he has with St. Brown, J-Mo, Tim Patrick, and Sam Laporta is fantastic. But I also look back to that Tampa Bay game where he threw the ball 55 times, and like, that's not the recipe for success for this team. Running the football, establishing the run, and establishing the mentality and the physicality of the game through David Montgomery, I think, is a very underrated aspect of this team. We haven't really seen the Lions without David Montgomery in quite a long time. So that's the part that sparks the most concern for me. We've seen the defense overcome their issues plenty. So a lot of things change just based off of that Vikings game, which is 3 weeks from now. So see how things go over the next 2 weeks. Continue to take in every bit of information we get and see how it's all going to turn out, because the postseason is the focus now at this point. The Lions are in the postseason. Whether or not they get the number one seed, you got to wait to find out. All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, we are going to spend some time talking about some college basketball with the Michigan Wolverines, who have kind of valleyed a little bit. DJ's got some thoughts on what's going on with them. We'll also touch on the Spartans, maybe look across the state to Detroit for the other pro sports teams there as well. Here on Mid Madness, 95.3 WBCK. Back here on Mid Madness, 95.3 WBCK, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes. The Michigan Wolverines are suddenly on a two-game losing streak. Last time we talked, they had just dropped the game to Arkansas. Very tight game. Entertaining. Not a loss to really feel bad about. A ranked loss to Oklahoma, 87-86. Still don't want to feel too bad about that. It's still a quad one loss, and something that can look good for you later down the road, so long as you still fulfill, not necessarily expectations, but the fact that you're 8-3 right now, you're ranked, and you've played some fantastic basketball, you want to make sure that is a good thing later by taking care of your business when you are expected to do so. But DJ, I know you're not super excited about the way that game came to a close and the fact that Michigan could not close it out there against the Sooners.
There is a real issue with this Michigan basketball team. 76-64 to TCU. Michigan was up by 15-20 in that game. 72-70, they were up by double digits in that game. That's a loss to Wake Forest. Virginia Tech, they were up 15-20 in that game. Win by 12. They did very well against Xavier. Wisconsin, they were up by 10-12 with about 7 to 8 minutes left in that game. Win by 3. Iowa, they were up almost 25 points at multiple points within this game. Win by 2. Arkansas up by 15 late in the second half. Lose by 2. Oklahoma up by almost 20 in the second half. Lose by 1 on a 4-point play. You know that what is the common denominator in all of those games, win or loss? Michigan turns the ball over like it is their job in the second half.
Mm.
It is ridiculous. Hang on to the ball. Make smart decisions. Take better shots. The Oklahoma game I watched Wednesday night, Michigan lost because they decided to take 12 plus three-pointers in the last 8 minutes of the game and didn't hit. It hit one of those 12. One for 11, one for 12, however you want to count it, behind the line at the end of this game. That's disgusting work. Get to the rim. You have there are 3 7-footers on this team, and there are always 2 of them on the floor. Get to the rim. That is where your bread and butter is. You can get a layup on almost every single possession in any level of basketball if you are patient enough to wait for your shot. Michigan's not doing that. Michigan gets frantic. Michigan turns the ball over, and it lets teams get back in games that they have no business competing in. If Michigan played the last 6 minutes, or you know what, won't even say six, the last 8 minutes like they do the first 32, they'd win every game by 15+. But they go out in the last 8 minutes of the game, and they forget how to play basketball. And I get it, because everything gets amped up in the last 8 minutes. Everything is like Uber, like, oh my God, you know, it's a 12-point game. We got to start really D'ing up. We got to really put some pressure on these Michigan guys, see what they can do in this pressure. And they fold under that pressure every single time. And if somebody else other than Danny Wolf takes a shot or makes a play at the end of a game again, I'm going to blow a head gasket right here. Yep. 7-foot ball handler Danny Wolf, wearing number one, is the best player in a Michigan uniform this year. If you are in a close game at the end of the game, no one deserves to have the ball in their hands more than number one. Danny Wolf is your golden ticket. You remember, what's that boy name? Charlie from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Danny Wolf is the golden ticket inside that chocolate bar. Mm. He's going to take you right to the factory, which is the NCAA tournament. But if you go away from that, you're going to end up like Miss Blueberry, and you're going to blow away. It's easy. It's simple. Run the game that got you to where you were at that point. The first 32 minutes of the game, they're moving the ball around. Everybody's moving around. Danny Wolf and Vlad Goldin are running the pick and roll as 2 7-footers flawlessly. And then we get to the end of the game and we go away from that. It makes zero sense to me. Don't fix what ain't broke. Run your game and force teams to get you out of that. Until then, take care of the ball, hit your free throws, and you're going to win tons of games, do well in the Big Ten, and then make a run in the Big Ten tournament. I do still think it's early. I do think all of the losses are good losses for Michigan, but we need to get more good wins. We don't need a lot of good losses. We need some good wins to combat those as well. Done with the rant. I think they're in a good spot, but got to clean up the decision-making late game and then handling the ball and reducing turnovers.
Yeah, Golden and Wolf are two of three prominent players who are shooting above 50% from the field. And the other is Shedder, if I'm saying that correctly.
Yes, Will Shedder, who's also a 7-footer.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're just your big guys. Now, all of these guys, you know, aren't strictly just under the basket kind of guys, but everybody else is shooting under 50%, which isn't like, you know, end of the world type stuff, but it goes to prove your point of you want the guys that you trust are going to put the ball through the net in clutch moments. So get the ball to those guys. Everybody else kind of just needs to step up and get to that level as well. You've got opportunities to grow. Two very close, very tough losses that kind of prove that you're in that territory. You've just clearly also got a hump to get over. So take this Purdue Fort Wayne game seriously. Go out there and execute. Pull out a huge win. Western Kentucky, do the same thing. USC is an opportunity to do something fun and big on the road and put everything that you took in those other two games to close out 2024, put them into practice against a conference opponent. And then you've got an opportunity to once again take on a ranked opponent in UCLA on the 7th of January and kind of put all of that into place, right? You take things four games at a time and show and take the opportunities to learn and to grow and then to put into practice, and it'll take you a long way in that sport. Michigan State, on the other hand, they are also ranked. They're ranked 20th. They're 9-2 at this point in the season. They're enjoying a four-game winning streak. They've throttled since the last time we have talked. They put the business on to Minnesota, put even more business onto Nebraska, and then put some business onto Oakland as well. So three big convincing wins for Michigan State, who find themselves second in the conference standings, 2-0 in the conference, 9-2 overall, only behind UCLA with a 10-1 record. DJ, thoughts on the Spartans and how they are going? They also have two Group of Five matchups against FAU and Western Michigan coming up to close out the year.
I love what Michigan State has been doing so far this year. They're following their normal, you know, playbook and how they like to set things up for their season. And they're playing good ball right now, you know, taking care of business against Minnesota and Nebraska, both by in hefty margins. You also take care of Oakland in Battle of the D in a healthy margin as well. You got FAU and Western, which should be no competition for you. Ohio State and Washington shouldn't be any bother either. Northwestern might give you a little push, but I trust them against them as well, which means they're coming in on like a 10-game win streak before they play Penn State, which is going to be somewhat of a tough game. They've played good basketball this year, but I do expect that one comes down to Tom Izzo just simply being a better coach than so many different coaches in the NCAA basketball realm. I expect them to beat Penn State off of his coaching ability and the situations he puts them in. Illinois will always be a tough game, but they're on the down out. They're on the down this year compared to where they normally are. So I could see Michigan State coming out on top of that one. And then their next very tough test is Rutgers, who has two of the best guards in the country in Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey. They've been absolutely fantastic. That'll be a game to watch all the way on January 25th. But State's in a very good spot. Expect them to be a tournament team, and they're going to be competing for both the regular and tournament Big Ten championships.
All right, while we've got a minute, why don't we just keep it on the hardwood and also talk NBA basketball a little bit. The Detroit Pistons, since last we talked, they've kind of had a rigorous schedule. They've played some fairly elite teams, two trips to Boston to take on the Celtics, the Bucks, who are back in business up to 14-11 on the season, tough loss there as well. Most recently got handled by the Jazz, Colin Sexton and Keontae George, putting in work there for Utah, who's I think a little bit better than, you know, they have been in recent years. Nonetheless, you know, another game here coming up against the Suns later tonight, but they did pick up some wins against the Heat and the Knicks, and I believe we didn't talk about that Pacers win either. They're 11-17, and I was just scrolling through some statistics. They're just kind of, and this is a good thing, they're just kind of average at everything statistically. There's probably some things that I'm overlooking here, just not being the biggest basketball nerd in the world, but most of the statistics, you just kind of see the Detroit Pistons hanging out right in the middle of the league rankings on pretty much everything. Do you get the impression that they're just an average team that's going to lose more games than not? Or is that kind of enough of a positive symbol to kind of inspire a little bit of hope in that things are continuing to get better?
Things are getting better, but they are an average team. Last year, they were far below average. So you can't say things aren't getting better, because they are. They're an average team, and they're in that average realm where they're going to beat other average teams, lose to other average teams, but they're also able to go out and win or lose to anyone. They are competing and beating some of the best teams in the NBA, but also losing to some of the worst teams in the NBA. So they're right in that comfortable middle range. And I think that it's a progression year where they're just going to keep doing themselves, keep getting better, keep paying attention to what they have in-house, look to make changes in the offseason, and then look to have a really good year next year.
I'll tell you one thing that they are really bad at and one thing that they are really good at. They are really, really bad at getting steals, creating turnovers in general, and in that same vein, in free throw percentage. So they're not taking opportunities, and they're not taking advantage of the opportunities that are given to them, and that is concerning. That said, they're a top 10 rebound team. So they've got that to at least to grow on. And I think that was kind of somewhat expected based off of the way that the team has been built. Average shooters across the board, which is usually something that's going to keep you in most games. However, if you are turning the ball over way more than you are getting turnovers, that's where you're going to start to find problems. All right, we'll take a break and come back. And we're going to take the opportunity, because I won't be here next week, to talk about the upcoming Alabama versus Michigan ReliaQuest Bowl down in Tampa, Florida. DJ's the Michigan fan. I'm the Alabama fan. Let's have a little fun with it next here on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK.
Detroit sports fans, Wolverines and Spartans alike, this is your sports show, Mitten Madness, with Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes on 95.3 WBCK.
All right, we're back here here on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK, Jake Harrison and Dejon Hughes. Let's talk about the game that is going to take place on New Year's Eve at noon in Tampa, Florida, the place where the Bucks play, Raymond James Stadium. The Alabama Crimson Tide, number 11, the first team out of the 12-team college football playoff, is going to take on the 7-5, but with a noted win against Ohio State, the Michigan Wolverines, which of course pits me, an alumni of the University of Alabama, against DJ, a lifelong Michigan Wolverine fan. And once again, last time these two played was actually January 1st of this year. So they begin the year in the Rose Bowl looking to go play for the national championship. Michigan wins that game, and it's one of the best games of the entire season last year. And now both teams are on the outside looking in, but no way of getting in because it's all settled. And they face each other on the last day of the season as completely different teams under new head coaches with decimated rosters in varying ways. And now they find themselves playing in this ReliaQuest Bowl. And from the Alabama perspective, there's a lot of things that have changed even in just the past couple of weeks with opt-outs and guys going through the transfer portal. One guy, Jalen Mbakwe, who went into the portal and 2 days later said, nah, I'm coming back. So he's likely to not play in the game despite being one of the more talented defenders on Alabama's defense as a freshman defensive back. So they might be without him. But nonetheless, a fun game, I think, one that I am excited to see. Alabama's already opened up as an 11.5-point favorite, but I think there are some opportunities there for Michigan to take advantage of Alabama and pull out a win here. DJ, what do you think your Wolverines need to do to beat Alabama, considering that they are the underdogs?
We got to have a defensive performance from the blessings of God. Like, they got to go out and play football like they've never played football before.
He said we need divine intervention.
We go need it real bad. Like, the thing is, we have to get so many stops that the offense is able to go out and kick off field goals and win. Like that is the type of mentality this defense is going to need. If it goes into any type of shootout, if Michigan is going to have to put up any amount of large points, I'm talking more than 28. Like if Bama scores 14, 21 in the first half, this game might just be done. And not because Michigan can't score that many points, but I don't trust them to score into the 30s and 40s like they may need to beat Bama, unless it is a defensive stalwart battle that is going to keep it low scoring. Then Michigan can compete with anybody. If you're in a tough-nosed game where it's tough to gain yards and you got to put up just enough points, Michigan can battle with anybody. If you start asking teams to put up points and points and points, that's where Michigan falls off.
Yeah, Michigan has only scored above 30 points twice. It was against Fresno State and Northwestern. Alabama has done that several times. Though I will say that offense looked exposed against Oklahoma. Jalen Milroe expected to play in the game, also expected to declare for the NFL draft. So one last chance for him to look good, and that Michigan defense is certainly the opportunity to do that. I think a big thing for Alabama here is just to lean on the running game. And I don't mean feed into Michigan's ball game like Ohio State does. I mean play Alabama football. I mean not going, you know, the extra route of trying to light up the scoreboard so that Michigan can't come back. I think Alabama needs to establish that they know how to control a football game and that they can do it against a team that is more often than not physically superior to their opposition. As far as strength and leverage goes, especially, you know, the things that make a great rushing attack. Alabama's defense, I think, for the most part this season has been fairly strong. And so to me, I don't have a lot of concern with Alabama when they're on defense and Michigan's got the football, that things aren't going to go particularly well unless things go the way of Vanderbilt, which I don't see happening. That all to be said, I think this is a game that is going to come down to which team has more mental fortitude. And I think that's where Michigan has an extreme advantage because of their win over Ohio State. Alabama beating Auburn was business as usual, right? There wasn't a whole lot that went into that. There was no expectation that Auburn was going to win that football game. For Michigan, there was next to no expectation that they would go in and beat Ohio State. So they've got that emotional high. Obviously, this happened several weeks ago, but they've got that that emotional high that they can carry, that they know that they can stand up when they need to, that they've got that emotional toughness that I'm not so sure that Alabama's got, because Alabama knew what they needed to do to make the playoff, and that involved not losing to Oklahoma. And that's when they got absolutely embarrassed. I don't think Alabama's a mentally tough football team, and I think that's one area, DJ, where your Wolverines have an extreme advantage.
Possibly. My concern is that Michigan doesn't get up for games like they do for Ohio State. Rightfully so.
That's
like
true.
That game means so much more than every other game, but you just don't. And, you know, and maybe you do get up for Bama because it's Bama. I think we saw it last year with the Rose Bowl. I think they really got up for that game and were ready to play because it was Bama. And other times you're like, look, we beat Ohio State. We had a winning record. Let's call it good on the year. I'm not feeling that way. I would love to beat Bama both to start and end this year. It would mean we totally owned 2024.
right.
But at the same time, I could see us possibly not getting up for this game because of the same or that carrying over. I saw it with a JV basketball team from my home school, Learning Arts this year. They beat their crosstown rival, Kalamazoo Central, in a 94-90 overtime game and then got blown out in their next two games by teams that weren't that much better than them. But sometimes that emotion of winning a game that you weren't supposed to win or winning a high-stakes, high-emotional game trails over into the others and helps you and kind of changes your focus. So that could also be the case, too, is Michigan could walk into this game blinded by the fact that they beat Ohio State and they're kind of feeling better about themselves, and Bama goes, well, we're still Bama.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that could happen in this game, but I am 1,000% pulling for Michigan to do the funniest thing of the year.
It's very similar, I think, to the 2020 Citrus Bowl meeting between these two, which was the most recent meeting that wasn't the Rose Bowl, in which Alabama won 35-16. That was the year that Tua Tagovailoa had his devastating hip injury. Mac Jones stepped in for the remainder of the season. Alabama lost one game that they could not afford to lose, and it knocked them out of the playoffs. And Michigan had an above average season that year. And when Alabama met Michigan in that game, they throttled them. And that all carried over into the 2020 Alabama team that, I'll tell you straight up, I think is the most talented college football team I've ever seen. It's right there with 2019 LSU. And I understand that my bias definitely shines through on that. But nonetheless, these are two of the big powerhouses in college football history. And they've only met six times. And they are 3-3 against each other. So whoever wins this gets all the bragging rights. But I would say if Michigan can beat Alabama twice within one calendar year, that would be very, very special to that program. You already get to hold over the fact that you've got more wins than us all time, and now you get to kind of shine light on the fact that you have a winning record against us for the first time since 2000, when Tom Brady beat the Crimson Tide in the Orange Bowl on a 1-point victory, and you also beat him twice in one season, and you know, overcame the changing of coaches, legendary coaches, a bit quicker than Alabama did, all things being considered. But you'll get the opportunity next week, DJ, to talk all the trash in this game. And I'll be down in Alabama a touch more brainwashed than usual within, the Crimson Tide lore. But nonetheless, it'll be a fun game. I'm excited for it. And I'm sure we'll pick it next week as well. And there won't be any bias selections whatsoever. Speaking of picks, let's get to that next here on Mitten Madness. We've got college football playoff games. We've got intense NFL matchups. And we're going to pick them all next on Mitten Madness. 95.3
WBCK.
Madness 95.3 WBCK. Time to wrap things up with our picks. Six games,
three of them, college football playoff matchups. We're going to pick the winners. We don't know what happened in the Notre Dame game. We picked that game last week, and we're recording this week's show, of course, before that game takes place. So with all of that in mind, and speaking of last week, DJ, how are those standings looking? It's my understanding that things are not looking very good for me.
I wouldn't say that. We went with the exact same picks last week, so you have that going for you. You're not going to lose or gain any ground. More importantly, you're not losing any. But we both went 2-3 in the five games we had last week. I'm up to 55-42. You're at 54-43. So this week could be a pretty big week for you.
And we both picked Notre Dame, right?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure that we're...
Yes, we did.
Okay.
I was close to not.
Yeah, right.
But we did.
It'll be interesting to see how we go in the other three playoff games. We'll save those for the back end of it. We'll get started with some big NFL matchups. Most of them take place on Saturday, but I'll get us started with the Sunday matchup that everyone should keep an eye on, because if the Eagles lose, it will help out the Detroit Lions quite a bit. That being said, the Washington Commanders are 9-5, and they have come back down to earth quite a bit. They had that three-game losing streak, at least losing to Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and Dallas, that closing out on Thanksgiving, came back from the bye week, and they beat Tennessee, had the bye week, came back from that, and almost dropped one to a pretty bad New Orleans Saints team. Washington's 9-5, in a position to make the playoffs, and they host the Eagles, who have been rolling. I mean, they stomped the life out of my Pittsburgh Steelers last week. They know how to run the ball, they know how to protect the football, and they play some pretty fantastic defense too. DJ, who you got between the Eagles and the Commanders?
As you know, there is part of me that lives in the city of brotherly love. That is a very important city to me, a city that I thoroughly enjoy. They have been playing amazing football this year. They only have one loss on the road, and honestly, they're playing in that dumpster fire of a stadium, Northwest.
That is a bad stadium.
Which is going to play a factor into this game, but I think the Eagles know the road they have in front of them. The only way to kind of control their destiny is to win out, and they're hoping for some losses in some other places, but they have to handle their business first, and comes with that is beating the Washington Commanders, which is what I have them doing this weekend.
Yeah, I think Washington's good enough to win the remainder of their games, but I don't think they're quite good enough to beat the Eagles. Eagles are playing on a different planet right now. What I saw them do to my Steelers last week was, it wasn't even frustrating. It was impressive to watch a team manhandle another elite team the way that they did. So props to them for it, and I think they'll get the win this week as well. I'm taking Philly.
That takes us over to another game happening on the professional gridiron. This one you have a little more stakes in, or should I say a lot more. divisional round matchup with the dreaded Baltimore Ravens. M&T Bank Stadium, you guys making the trip over. 5-3 on the road are your Steelers. Ravens are 4-2 at the crib. ESPN giving them a 66.6% chance on their matchup predictor. Will Lamar Jackson and the Ravens come out on top, or does your defense have enough to stop them where they are?
Well, I'll say this. TJ Watt's going to play in the game. George Pickens is not. And that is, it's almost more concerning that George Pickens is not going to play in this game, because he's sat out the past 2 weeks just hoping that he would be able to come back in time for this game, because this game is more important than even the one that takes place on Christmas Day, 4 days after the fact, which is stupid, by the way. The Steelers and the Ravens both have to play on Christmas Day after playing on Saturday. Absolutely absurd. But not having Pickens is a concern for me. But that being said, the Ravens just, they have struggled so mightily against Steelers and played so well against everybody else. But keep in mind, they're 9-5. They're not exactly a perfect team, despite how well Lamar Jackson is playing. I think you look at the Baltimore Ravens, you look at the Cincinnati Bengals, they're the same team with different outcomes, except for the fact the Bengals defense is absolutely broken. It is terrible. I'm going to stick with the Steelers, and it's not really a place of bias that I'm picking them. It's just the Ravens are missing that extra oomph to beat a team like the Steelers. Despite how well they run the ball, their defense, I think, is going to let them down as the Steelers come back after a bad week last week.
And you know what I got to say to that? Chances make champions. I don't know why I believe in this chance that I'm going to take, but I believe that the Ravens have just enough to win this game, because honestly, the division's on the line. Playoff hopes could possibly be on the line. These are important games to win. Lamar Jackson is a winner. The only thing that gets in his way sometimes, in my opinion, is Coach Harbaugh.
I don't think
that's going to be the case this weekend. I got the Ravens coming out in what will be a close game.
Steelers win the division if they win. Baltimore, I think, just clinches a playoff spot. Baltimore doesn't win the division if they win the game.
Well, I'm just saying, like,
yeah, I'm just clarifying that aspect of it.
Say they win today, then things get muddy over the next couple of weeks.
I mean, Baltimore's going to make the playoffs. Steelers have already clinched one. It's going to be a fun game, I'm going to tell you that. I just, naturally hope I do not lose it. The Kansas City Chiefs and Houston Texans will also play a Saturday and a Christmas Day game. So at least all four of these teams all have to play two games in 4 days. doing that to four of your best teams is kind of mind-boggling. Nonetheless, good job, NFL. The Chiefs are 13-1. They hold the best record in the NFL, though they certainly do not always look like the best team in the NFL. In fact, last week, just beating the Cleveland Browns 21-7. If Cleveland isn't an absolute turnover machine on offense, Cleveland could theoretically have won that game. Houston has struggled offensively for weeks now. Even when they've been good, they just haven't been able to be consistent. CJ Stroud up to 9 interceptions on the season, just 17 touchdowns. Joe Mixon has been a little bit more inconsistent, but he's still been a lifeblood for that franchise when he's been available, 910 yards on the ground. Mahomes, I was telling you before we got started on the segment, Mahomes' stat line is almost identical to that of Bo Nix, if you need to understand. Bo Nix is having a great rookie season, and Patrick Mahomes, being one of the greatest of all time, is having a horrendous season, despite some added weaponry to this offense. DJ, this is not necessarily a must-win for either team, though Houston would definitely appreciate it. It'd make their path a little bit easier, despite them being in, you know, an easy position to win their division. But nonetheless, big game on Saturday. Texans on the road in Kansas City, a potential preview of a playoff matchup. Who you got?
I'm going to go with trends. I'm going to go with the NFL being an organization I don't really like right now, and I will not explain that to anyone. But if you're catching the drift here, I've been noticing some patterns with the Chiefs. I'm going to take them to win this game, even though I think that they shouldn't.
What he's saying is... is that it's a conspiracy.
Yes.
I'm going to go against DJ's conspiracy. I think the Texans are going to get right this week. Chiefs are good, don't get me wrong, and their defense is what plays a big part of that, but the Texans also have a great defense, and I think that gets lost a little bit in the face of their struggles. I think that the Texans defense will make enough of an impact, get after Patrick Mahomes and the fact that he's injured a little bit, and put a second loss into that right column for the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Texans get a huge win to bolster their position in the playoffs and put them one step closer to winning the AFC South. I'm going with Houston.
That's
going
to send us over to another team in Texas. This time we're talking college ball. Southern Methodist is making the trip over to State College. Both teams 11-2. Both teams wear blue, but it is going to be a whiteout for Penn State. Are they going to win a whiteout game, or will SMU shock the world?
Listen, I'd give anything for SMU to walk in and win this game. I would. Penn State is the team that I have the least amount of faith in to win a college football playoff national championship. I have more faith in SMU to do that. The problem is that it as far as intelligence goes, it's just not the right thing to do to choose SMU in this game. They don't play up north. They never do. And we haven't really seen them have the opportunity to do that, even in the ACC, you know, where you have some opportunities to do that. They didn't have any late season cold weather games. They didn't. And so you don't want that first test to be in Happy Valley against Penn State. It's not an easy place to play. We saw SMU was rattled early by the moment in the ACC championship. I anticipate that will happen again. And the problem is that Penn State, despite all their flaws, is still a more talented team than Clemson. So I think Penn State will hold on to a small lead and carry it throughout the rest of the game. I don't think there's going to be a lot of fireworks in this one. I think Penn State simply survives because they have a touch more talent than SMU in this particular circumstance.
I don't know why I trust Penn State. I'm just going to go with home field advantage.
I don't trust them.
My point. I don't at all, but I am picking them to win this game. I got Penn State coming out on top.
All right, next one. Orange Crush in Texas. The Longhorns are going to play host to the Clemson Tigers. If you don't like either of these shades of orange, just get ready for DJ's game. It only gets worse. Nonetheless, Texas and Clemson should be a fun matchup between two teams that can be extremely explosive, but are also wildly inconsistent. It's the 5 seed and the 12 seed. And honestly, DJ, I think anybody could win because both these teams are prone to just having bad days out of nowhere. And if anybody shows up on Saturday with a bad day, they're bound to lose. I'm going to throw it to you quick. Who you got?
I got Texas because I've never really liked Clemson, and they didn't play all that well in what was not a good ACC conference this year, in my opinion, compared to what they've been in recent years. So I'm going to go with Texas to beat Texas and come out with a win, but wouldn't be shocked to see them just blow it.
Yeah, I could definitely see Texas blowing this game. I'm not going to lie. But that being said, Clemson's not quite as talented as Texas. Texas also gets that home field advantage, which is pretty crucial. And again, Clemson didn't close things out against SMU, which also takes away quite a bit of confidence in them as a playoff team. It's the whole reason that they're number 12, right, and not getting a bye is because they're not quite as good as the other conference champions. And Texas, give them credit where it's due, man. They probably could have and should have beaten Georgia in the SEC championship. And that says says a lot about them. I am going to stick with the Longhorns in round one.
I've got Texas as well. I told you that. Last game of the week. Wow, I can't talk right now.
Well, both our teams' biggest rivals. Yes. Isn't that wild?
Yes. And so I think, do we even need to talk about this game? I think we know where we're both going with this.
Yeah, they both lose. We're both going in the middle of the field.
Yes, I would love to see them both lose. And as much as I would love to pick the opposite side, I think I'm going to be siding with you and picking Ohio State.
Yeah, I would like to see Tennessee pull this one off. I'm not going to lie. Just because I, believe it or not, I hate Ohio State more than I hate Tennessee. Tennessee's only gotten a couple over Alabama since I've been alive. Ohio State's way more annoying. But that being said, I'm not so sure that Tennessee's offense can travel, especially as cold as it is up here in the Midwest. It's going to be a tough one. Nico Iamaleava is going to have to not make mistakes late, which is something that he has struggled with this season. And I think Ohio State can get out to a lead earlier and put the pressure on Tennessee, and they're not going to be able to overcome that. So I'm going to stick with Ohio State in this one particularly.
I don't know why I'm doing it, but I'm doing it. So that's that, which puts us at almost a common week.
Yeah.
Texas, Penn State, Ohio State, and the Eagles is what we have in common. I've got Ravens over your Steelers. Obviously, you're on the opposite side of that. I've got Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs while you're taking CJ Stroud and the Texans. The weekend is upon us.
All right, Sunday night football is coming to WBCK this weekend with Dallas hosting Tampa Bay. You'll get that game. You'll also get Green Bay and New Orleans on Monday. We got a ton of football coming at you throughout the holidays. You will get the Saturday doubleheader next week with the, or excuse me, blah, 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 blah. I messed it up. You'll get the Christmas doubleheader week 17. You'll also get the Saturday tripleheader on December 28th and more to come as well as far as what happens on week 18. We'll also have the full NFL playoffs like we did last year. A lot to get through the end of college football. We'll also have the Michigan-Alabama game, the bowl game, the ReliaQuest Bowl will take place here on WBCK as well on January 31st at noon. So be sure to stay plugged in, and I'll make sure to get those notes to DJ next week so you tune in to all of the great football games we have here on the station. But that'll do it for us, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes. I'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. DJ will hang out with you next week, and happy football, happy holidays. We'll catch you later.
Join Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.